Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burwich, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, pretty much just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, put it up here on the podcast feed, and you people listen to it. At least, I hope you listen to it. I guess if you're not listening to this, you're not listening to it. Anyway, it's been a while since the last podcast, which I seem to say quite often these days, really. I guess the reasons are multiple this time around. I've actually taken some time off work. Now, you may think that means I've got more time to do stuff, but it means I fill up my day a lot more efficiently. So since I've got home, I've been doing this intensive German course. That's taking around about 4 hours a day, so I'm finally learning the language of the country where I live. Also, my brother came to visit, and there was, of course, my brother, his wife, and three children, two of which spent a lot of time vomiting. And then, of course, my girlfriend picked up the vomiting kind of theme and continued it for a while as well. So we've had lots of vomit here. And also, not only am I doing a course, like taking a course on learning stuff, I'm also teaching a course. I'm having students around in my own studio here doing a course on performing and becoming a professional juggler and things like that, which takes a lot of preparation too, which means that when I take time off, I'm actually busier than I am when I'm working. So really quite strange. The final reason it's taking me a long time to finish off this book, not just because I haven't had a lot of time, it's because it's a book that when I'm a bit tired and I start reading it, I pretty much fell asleep quite quickly. Now, that might not be the fault completely of the book. Maybe I was just a bit too tired, but I think there might be something, so maybe a mix of the two. The book really didn't keep my attention very well, and I was tired as well when I was trying to read it. The book that I'm reviewing this time round is by William Gibson from 1984, Neuromancer. And from memory, off the top of my head, I think 1984 is about 2 years after the release of Blade Runner, and I think the film Tron as well. And this may or may not be a coincidence about the release date and the writing of this book, but maybe it was the vibe of the time, or maybe it was sort of like some direct influences from those films. But that's what I would say William Gibson, Neuromancer, this cyberpunk classic, the thing that really started off cyberpunk, I guess, in a big way. It just feels a lot like the movies around at the same time. So it was definitely captured at the zeitgeist of the world at the time. So let me get into it. The book is set, the world of the book, pretty much set in some kind of like generic dystopia, like I say, very kind of Blade Runner, you know, mean streets, like high technology, all that kind of stuff. There's you never actually get to know that much about like the world in depth. You certainly don't know about the wider world. You really just know about the locations that the characters in the book visit. And even then, you don't really see or get to know anything outside of their direct experience. So they go to a space station, but you never actually get to know what the space station's like, except that people live in it. You know, it's a very strange kind of thing there. There's no actual real explanation of when abouts it is in the future, how far in the future it is. It's just far enough along so that we don't really recognize it. Or some things we do recognize, and some things that we don't recognise. But we don't know the history of how we got there from here. That's just all left up to, just a few hints now and then throughout the book. And finally, of course, there is some cyberspace going on, which is sort of like millions or billions of computers and people interacting over some kind of network. And there's artificial intelligences running stuff, and companies have sort of mainframes, and people jack into the cyberspace. And when they're in there, it's like seeing nodes of information or processes and everything being represented as lights and lines and blocks and geometric shapes and things, and you can sort of make your way around it and access different information and contact people across cyberspace. Sounds familiar? Yeah, I guess it does. So the story, we follow Case. His name is Case. I can't remember his real name, but his last name is Case, so we just know him as Case. And he's our protagonist, and he was a hacker. Before the book began, he was a hacker, but then he stole some money from someone he was working for, and they sort of did this messed up his brain slightly as a punishment. They messed up his brain so he could no longer be a hacker. He could no longer jack in to cyberspace. So then he had to live on the streets and sort of make his way as some kind of trader, fixer, kind of underbelly of Japanese society in some city in Japan. And he spends a lot of time in the book taking drugs, and he has this freaky girlfriend called Linda. But she doesn't get on so well with her, and in the end sort of breaks up, and he's sort of slowly but surely killing himself. That's his sort of main motivation at the beginning. All hope is lost. He lived to hack. He lived to take, you know, to take journeys in cyberspace, and now he can no longer do it. He's slowly giving up hope. Until the love interest in the book, and also this hired gun called Molly, She is working for a man named Armitage. And anyway, Armitage and Molly contact Case and sort of offer to cure his brain. And in return for curing his brain, he will then work in this small team on some future mystery hacking job. And so that's what happens. And then, of course, they need help on this mystery hacking job. So they hatch a plan to steal the recorded memories of one of Case's ex-teachers, one of his teachers in the past who taught him about hacking and taught him about jacking into cyberspace, that he was actually killed, or he died in a hacking attempt, because that's what happens in cyberspace. You go in too deep, it can really affect your mind. So he was trying to hack into an artificial intelligence, and in that attempt he died, but also his brain was sort of not frozen, but like an imprint of his brain was copied out. All his memories were taken out, and all of his personality was taken out, and all his knowledge of hacking was taken out as well. And he was one of the greatest hackers ever. So what they do is they take this sort of what they call a flatliner, or I can't remember his exact name at the time, but they refer to him as a flatliner, someone who died, and the mind is still there. So they have Molly, Case, Armitage, and a few other characters, and then they go on this big, mysterious heist to do this one big operation. I don't really want to give it away too much. And along the way, of course, they discover exactly who they're working for. Of course, Armitage isn't the top of the chain. He's being ordered about from on top. On high, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there. Anyway, so normally at this point, I'd say I don't really want to go further in case I spoil things. In the case of this book, there's not actually a whole lot more to say, and not a whole lot of plot to spoil. So I might as well just wrap it up, not quite to the end of the book, but pretty much what you get in the end of the book is that we find out they're working for an artificial intelligence with a split personality, and one side is trying to join with the other side to become more powerful, but the other side that it wants to join with doesn't want to join with the first side, because it already considers itself to be like a whole being with personality and actually be alive. So that sort of wraps up what the aim is. I don't really want to give away too much along the way, but that's sort of like the aim of the book that you discover around about half of the way through. So, good plot. A bit spare, a bit past, not a lot going on there, but, it sort of took me through to the end of the book. The characters. Never really liked any of the characters. I guess that comes maybe from sort of the punk side of the cyberpunk equation that we have here. I don't really like the punk ethic or worldview. Case, our protagonist, is pretty much a bum. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't give a shit about anything. And maybe it's because he doesn't have access to the cyberspace. And that's what he lives for. And so when he's lost that, he goes into drugs, and he just takes drugs and then more drugs. But then even when he gets back into cyberspace, that's suddenly like a drug for him. He treats that as a drug. And then, when he's not in cyberspace and he's not doing something else important, he starts taking drugs as well. He has an operation to stop himself from drugs having any effect on him. And then he finds drugs that get around this restriction, and then he gets high as well. So I just, all the way through, it's just like, oh, all the time he just lives for taking drugs. He's a slacker, he's a bum, he doesn't actually care about anything, and I just don't really like characters like that. Molly is a bit more interesting. I actually had she had a bit more substance, and I had a bit more sympathy for her as the book went on, especially when you read about her past as some kind of futuristic prostitute. It comes to light later on in the book, and I thought that was quite interesting. She also has these glass eye covers, or these sort of chrome eye covers that amplify light in dark light, so she's looking really cool. And she's got blades that come out of her fingers, which when I first read it, I was thinking, oh, for goodness sake, we don't need this kind of rubbish stuff. If you're going to have some cool badass character, they don't need sort of body modifications like that. But it does actually play into the book with the themes of the book and interactions with other characters later on. So I actually quite like that. Not just silly gadgets for the sake of it. They do actually have some impact on the themes and the story here. And of course, as I said, she was the love interest. So there's this relationship that strikes up between Case and Molly. They're professionals, they're working together. But of course, they just end up in bed with each other and have sex, pretty much on the first or second meeting. And the relationship doesn't actually have any impact. It doesn't seem to have that much impact on their characters or the motivations. We're told they do, but I didn't believe it, because there's no build-up or tension to this relationship. I think to go into this, explain it a bit more. What am I trying to say? Singularity Sky. I reviewed that book, and I said that the two main characters, they got together really quickly, too quickly. We don't see how they like get to know each other. We don't see them meeting each other and finding out what they see in each other, where they don't fall in love throughout the book. And instead, you know, literally two pages apart, they meet and then they're sleeping together already. And then throughout the whole book, there's no drama in their relationship, both in Singularity Sky and in this book. They're just together. Sort of, sometimes, you know, and they're, you know, they work together and they do stuff together, and we just have to believe that there's a couple, that they're a couple. But by the end, I don't believe that they have any strong connection between them, because I didn't see it develop and blossom at the beginning. So when at the end, it's a main part of the motivation, it's like, oh, I've got to get in there and save him, I've got to get there and save her. I just don't believe, I don't care enough about the relationship. I don't believe that they'd go through that. But if they'd have spent a little more time at the beginning of the book, or maybe if they had not got together until, like, you know, a few pages before that, or maybe 20 pages before that, so it sets it up, and then they've got to sort of, you know, brace themselves, make that choice to say, okay, am I going to go for the relationship, am I going to save her, or am I going to back out? You know, that kind of thing. But there's none of that there at all, and I just didn't really like it. That kind of dimension to their relationship. It was a bit boring. The other characters, they come and go. We're often told actually nothing more about a character than just their name and their role in the event. And it really annoyed me, because some of these characters, which, you know, I think they're just going to be there because some of them, they arrive and then they go again, and 10 pages later you don't even have to think about them until the end of the book, or no more until the end of the book. And after that's happened a few times, I'm thinking, okay, this is just one of those random characters who's going to come and go and just have a minor role. Suddenly, one of them, or two of them, or three of them will suddenly stick around until the end of the book, and they're like key figures in the final sort of like action sequences, in the final, you know, in the final themes of the end of the book and things like that. And but because I didn't realise that was going to happen, there was no big introduction to them. It's just like, oh, there was this person who was doing this, and then that becomes a main character later on. I've not invested anything. I mean, at one point there's this... for example, there's this random Turkish policeman who arrives at page 90, and he's sort of gone out of the book by page 95. I'm not kidding. I mean, literally is that quick. He just sort of fulfills a function in the book, a little plot thing, and then he gets dropped again. And then there's this other character who seems like a less important character, some Rastafarian spaceship pilot who just turns up. And I think, okay, that's great, a Rastafarian spaceship pilot. And then suddenly he becomes like a major character and is doing all kinds of stuff and saving the day at the end. I'm like, wait a second, he was just this random guy. And yeah, I just thought that was a little bit weird there. More characters. I'd like to talk a bit more about the characters here. I put a note of this here. The themes of the book, one of the main themes is about technology and free will, or technology and identity, or technology and, you know, choices you make and motivation. Because it's pretty much only like two or three characters in the book who don't experience, at some point in their lives or at some point in the story, complete control by technology over their actions. Okay, for example, Case, he is held hostage by his implants. You know, he's addicted to drugs, but also addicted to, you know, jacking into cyberspace, I guess. And also, Molly, we get told about her past as a prostitute. You know, technology is involved quite a lot there. Armitage, turns out he's not like a normal human being. He's a puppet being controlled by an artificial intelligence. And of course, there's the artificial intelligence themselves. They're different characters too. And then there's people who are clones. So, you know, they're created by technology to fulfill one role in life, and that's it. Some people are genetically engineered to do only one job. Some characters don't actually evolve in any way because they're snapshots of dead people used by other agents in the book to fulfill one job. And others are like frames of references used by the artificial intelligence to communicate with humans through the cyberspace at a human level. So they're not even real characters, they're just sort of like molds, sort of like I say, references that can be fleshed out and can be controlled by the artificial intelligences. And that just leaves like just a few characters who are actually sort of like what you call baseline human, that you actually can identify with on a human level without technology getting in the way of their motivations. And all these other characters, the one thing that they have in common is that they don't seem to have any external motivation, or that they don't have any external human motivation. They are what they are, and they don't need to change. They're doing their job. And while that makes them interesting on a conceptual level in this book, and the theme of that I really like, I don't actually find them that interesting on the sort of I want to read about them kind of level, and I care what they're doing kind of level. I don't really care about them if they're just they're just there to sort of demonstrate some technology, or just to, you know, as a tool for some other kind of technology. It's a very strange thing. The ones that aren't determined completely by technology are, I guess, the Rastafarian spaceship pilot, but he was very much just a caricature, not a lot there to identify with except an accent and maybe a hairstyle. And then there's Riviera, and he's like this thief kind of artist, kind of anarchist kind of guy, who has these implants that are in him, and he uses them to create holographic images around him, and he controls them directly with his mind, so he can bring about any image that he wants. And and there's a really great sequence where he does this artistic presentation, this pornographic sort of sadomasochistic kind of show that he puts on in a restaurant. And that's pretty cool, except he's a complete and utter sociopath. So he is outside of the control of technology and pretty much outside of the control of anyone and anything. And I like it because what he does in the book and what he represents in the book actually has layers of meaning. You know, every other character in the book just exists to fulfill like a plot point, or just to fulfill a role that needs to be taken, you know, and we move on, and that person does that, what are the names, doesn't really matter. But this guy actually has a character which is a bit wider, a bit more fleshed out. Even though his actual character isn't fleshed out, his sort of position in the book seems to be a bit more important. I don't know. And finally, I guess the other thing that, you know, the other character that doesn't have you know, that isn't constrained by technology to such an extent is the other half of the artificial intelligence, because the whole key to this here, is that he's learned to run his personality on RAM memory, or RAM, not on ROM, which is like random access memory and read-only memory. And I found this book, this point in the book, to be a little bit blunt. You know, it's sort of like life and intelligence equals the ability to change and renew random access memory, rather than being a static construct like read-only memory. And it was literally spelled out in those terms near the end of this book. And I'm like, okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gibson. You know, your themes, they were developing, for me, they were developing quite subtly before then, but then he sort of brings this big sledgehammer of like RAM, boom, ROM, boom, you know, alive, boom, dead, you know. And I'm just like, oh man, could have done without that right at the end of the book there. But that's pretty cool. I mean, I like the idea. It was just not handled so well at the end of the book. Another thing that I did like about the book, though, was this kind of technology-wise, is the SimStim link, which is like Molly is wired up, so she broadcasts all of her senses to Case, and Case can flick a switch, and he can experience simultaneously the stimulation that Molly is getting, SimStim, simultaneous stimulation experience. So while Molly is off on some kind of action-adventure, you know, breaking into a building, whatever she's doing, Case stays behind. He does technical support in cyberspace. But whenever he needs to see what Molly is up to or what she's doing, Molly doesn't have to report in. He can just flick a switch and he can live her actions directly. So whatever she does, he experiences at the same time. And of course, you get a bit seasick because she's moving, you know, and he's not. So it's a weird thing, and he can't make Molly look anywhere, but he experiences it all directly. And this leads Case to being attached to two different realities, and neither of them are his own. So he flicks the switch one way, and he's in cyberspace. He flicks it the other way, and he's in Molly's world. And this translates nicely into what I'd like to think of, or what I was thinking when I was reading the book, as sort of some kind of sixth-person narrative. First person is, I did this, I felt this. Second is that you did this, and you felt that. And third, which is what a lot of novels have, of course, written in, is he, she, or it did this, and it reminded him or her of this, you know. And in Neuromancer, of course, everything is in the third person, but then you've got these extra layers. So we get Molly was feeling this, so Case thought that, or Molly saw this, which made Case think of this, or Molly did that and hurt herself there, which made Case think this. So we get action from Molly and reaction from Case. We never actually talk about Molly, even in the third person, like directly, as in Molly did this, Molly did that. It's always like Case experienced Molly doing this. And there's huge sections of the book that are presented like this, which I'm sure I've read this kind of thing before somewhere, but for me it seemed to be a very like fresh storytelling technique. Two layers of third-person narrative, but sort of you access one third-person narrative through the other person's third-person narrative. And I quite like that there in the book. The thing is, what could have been done. They could have explored this even further. I mean, this is what I've done. I've actually done this in the past. I wrote a book about, you know, someone being able to access somebody else's, you know, stimuli at the same time. And the whole idea behind that was like, okay, what happens if these two people in the room at the same time as each other, looking at each other, and what happens maybe if they have sex, which was actually the story I was exploring, or the idea I was exploring with my little short story. But in this book, they never did it. You know, Case was there. Molly was sometimes right next to him in bed. Why didn't they have sex with this rig on, with this SimStim going at the same time? I would have been, you know, that would have actually been quite an interesting application of this technology, but didn't get it in the book. Another little thing about the writing style, though, is that it's got the cyberpunk kind of thing of short sentences. Can anyone find me a cyberpunk book, like early cyberpunk book, that within the first few chapters has more than, you know, what am I trying to say? Two independent clauses, which is separated by more than a full stop, or not separated by a full stop. Even like some like non-independent clauses, you know, you read the book, it's like, he did this, full stop. She did that, full stop. A car, full stop. A light, full stop. And it's, oh man, it just sort of seems to kill the flow for me as well. Full stop, period, by the way, for our American listeners here. Anyway, that's what you get, especially in the first part of the book. And at the beginning of chapters, you always start off with these very short sentences. And it sort of builds up into proper kind of sentences. But there's some good ideas in the book. I really did like some of the themes here and did enjoy reading about them. Even though I read the book before years ago, I think I enjoyed it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as I read it the first time, maybe, like, say, 10, 15, 13 years ago. I can't remember when it was. Back in probably around about 90, 96, I first read this book. Anyway, moving on. Things that I didn't like about the book, I guess the pacing. Part one runs to page... Let me look it up here. I put the bookmark in here. Runs to about page 40. Part two runs to page 90, which means that we've got... Part one is 40 pages, part two, 50 pages. Part three runs to the end of the book, which takes us up to around about 180 pages later. Let me just put it that way. And so in the first part, you know, looks lots of stuff happening. The second part, really good. Third part, I'm thinking, okay, well, it's going to be part three of, what, five? Part three of six in this book? No, it's part three of three. And they go up to the space station. The scene is set sort of like for the final heist, because that's what this book really is. It's a heist story, like a break-in puzzle game that they're doing. You know, you need to get the key to find the password, to access the widget, to grab the MacGuffin, to hand over and get the briefcase, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we're there. It's ready to go. And yet we're like not even like a third of the way through the book here. And parts one and two flew by. And then part three really, really drags. You know, they're within reach of the gold, and then the plot swings all over the place, and Case goes off and gets drunk and drugs, and subplots are explored here, and this goes on there, and that goes on there. I'm just like, get on with it. You're there. You're within reach. Just get on with it. A heist is meant to run smoothly, or not run smoothly. Either way, it's not meant to last 150 pages there at the end of the book, of a 300-page book, especially if, like, whole sections are entirely pointless and confusing at the same time. For example, two people take the same journey, the same distance. One person walks all the way there, and it takes absolutely forever. And they seem to walk all the way there because they want to do stuff in cyberspace at the same time. So to give them time to do that and other things to happen, they walk there. And then later, another character wants to catch up with the first character. So that person jumps on this little buggy, and they get there in 5 minutes. The other person was taking hours and hours to get them because they walked all the way. The other person jumps on a buggy. It's like, why didn't the first person catch the bus too? And this is just one example. But over and over again, things happen along the way for, like, inexplicable reasons. I don't understand it. Except, or maybe there were good reasons, but I didn't pick up with them. And normally I read quite closely. Second major problem with the book is that Gibson explains nothing. Things happen. But I never actually had a clue what actually happened. For example, good example, right at the beginning, jacking into cyberspace. What exactly does jacking into cyberspace entail? Well, as far as I can gather, it involves William Gibson coming up with a term called jacking in to cyberspace and using those words whenever he wants Case to access cyberspace. So it doesn't mean anything. You know, he uses a deck to do it. And what's a deck? A deck is a word that William Gibson has come up with and assigned to the device that connects someone to cyberspace. So, you know, as far as I can gather, This is the same with ice as well. Just another example. I just wrote this down in my notes here. Ice. I thought, what's ice? I couldn't remember what ice is. Ice is like, is it a file system? Is it a program? Is it a database? Is it a firewall? I don't really know what ice is. It's just put there. Ice. Maybe it's mentioned. I can't remember it in the book here. I'm just looking down from my notes, so I wondered why I put this. But it's for this same point. All I know is that a hacker uses some kind of ice to attack another kind of ice to get control of a process or get control of some information. And that, you know, and cyberspace renders this as some kind of pattern of lights and colours. So the story moves on when I read it. It goes, he saw the ice blossom, a fluorescent shade of blue, and the Chinese military virus attacked the ice. And I'm going, okay, so I know that some kind of ice or the virus is beating the ice and the ice is losing. But what is actually happening here? It seems to be just like a metaphor for something that's actually happening that I'm not really privy to. I don't understand the terminology here at all. I just don't get it. I've no idea. Now, for a piece of technology, this is actually either genius or just absolutely, you know, just a curse, a blessing and a curse at the same time. Because if you go specific, within a few years, your like science fiction novel will be really, really dated. Like those authors who wrote about computers and like tape readers and reels of information and things like that, or those who talked about floppy disk. You know, you're putting like a concept onto information storage in some way, or access to information, or access to computing, and by explaining or using specific words in that way, you're dating the concepts. And it's like the same as those people who write their novels set in the Cold War, and the Cold War has run on to like 2015, and they wrote the book in 1988, and you think, okay, that's really, really dated there, that it's pre-1989 that you wrote this book. Here, Gibson has created this technology which seems to be very influenced by Tron and other kind of visions of technology and computer technology and networking in the early 80s. But there's a certain vagueness to it, which means that it can be viewed through my like 2008 eyes, not through my 1984 eyes. Which means back then, you know, someone reading the book might have thought, oh, jacking into the cyberspace. Oh, they almost called it cybersphere there. Jacking into cyberspace means, you know, you access some mainframe via a dial-up over a telephone line. Just, you know, just off the top of my head. Like you do in War Games, in the film War Games. And now you're going, okay, now I'm free to think about it more along the lines of, okay, some kind of implanted Wi-Fi device and some cloud computing kind of thing there. You know, I can access the concept of jacking into the cyberspace through my 2008 eyes, and it hasn't dated it. The thing is, that works a bit, well, sort of okay for technology, but the book is infuriatingly vague on every point. It's like deliberately obtuse. Things keep happening, and I'm like, I don't know why that happened. Why did that happen? Character will say something or do something, and it's like in a film, you want like a close-up, and you want to see the reaction on the face and their facial expressions before they do something, or mid-stunt, or mid-decision that they're making. And here, it always seems to be really, really far away. And I can't see what's going on in their mind. What are they thinking? I don't know, they're all the way over there. I can't see anything. So we visit places, and there's just a hint at the geography, and we meet people, and we're told their name and maybe slightly what they look like, and that's it. And it's just, they're just, nothing else is there. And there's like a reference to a past historical event, which sounds really important, and yet we never find out why it happened, or who was doing it, or who benefited from it, or what actually took place when this big historical event happened. And again, it's like, it creates a world that hasn't aged. You know, I can still think of this world now is in the same terms as I actually think about the world now. You know, I can go, oh, of course, this would have been when in the future this president wins this election tomorrow, or whenever it's going to happen, whenever you're listening to this, you know. And I can take now as a starting point and extrapolate to the future in this book, just as I could have taken the same, you know, done the same extrapolation from 1984 when the book was written. It means that, you know, that the world that he's created hasn't aged very much. The downside, that it doesn't really exist at all in any way. It feels real in some ways, but then it doesn't. You know, I don't mind a world that's dated, but it needs to feel that there's something there. Here we get a fantastic feel of the world in from a, like a punk nihilistic kind of techno dystopia aesthetic kind of thing. I mean, that's strong. That's really there. There's a lot of style. But actually, you know, the substance of the world is not there at all. There's no substance. It's all style. Whereas the style, I can fill in the substance a bit in my head, you know, because I've got a bit of an imagination. Really, I just want some of the terminology to be explained. I want the world to be explained a bit more. And that means I can connect with the characters within it a bit better as well. I want more than aesthetic. I want more than just feel. this book does provide more than that, but falls short in the sort of plot and world and character departments. So to conclude, I'll wrap this up. I'm going to give it 2.5 stars out of 5. Because I did get a bit of enjoyment out of the book, but it was in places a bit tedious. Like I say, the pacing was a bit down and the world itself couldn't grip my imagination and the book itself couldn't keep my tired eyes open, which again may not be the book's fault. Thing is, I don't actually recommend this book to anyone, unless you're reading it as a sort of like, as a, I don't know, like a literary experiment or investigation, what I'm doing now into the origins of that there cyberpunk. You might not enjoy it. But then again, some people seem to rave on about this book and say how fantastic it is. They say it's so historic as well. I never actually touched on this. Oh, it's so historic. The thing is, it's not historic at all. There's some terminology in there. The only reason that the internet is called cyberspace, or was called cyberspace, was because the cyberspace that was described in this book was so vague, it could apply to anything. Any kind of popular computer network that popped up later would have been called cyberspace, because it's so vague in the book. And the Matrix is mentioned in here as well. And you think, oh, wow, that's the Matrix this and the Matrix that, and we access the Matrix. It's like, the Matrix is never explained. We're told that there is a thing called the Matrix that some people can access. We're never actually told what the Matrix is. So, sure, you can't really call it historic or influential. It's just because people have maybe, like, taken some terminology from this book and applied it to their own concepts, which is a bit disappointing. Oh, and you know, you can't just take two hits or two words that went on to mean one thing and something else means something else. Microsoft. Someone uses a device called a Microsoft, which is like a soft piece of like organic microcircuitry that you implant into your brain or into your head. It's called a Microsoft. But nobody now goes, oh wow, you know, William Gibson invented Microsoft. No, he didn't. He came up with a concept and applied like a term to it, applied a name to it, but that doesn't make anything in the future be called that. I know I'm going all over the place, maybe being a bit confusing here. I'm just saying I could come up with everything, you know, lots of things in the future. I'm going to say, oh, okay, I'm going to call this kind of thing, this flying car, and I'm going to call it a fly car. And then the next time somebody makes a flying car, if my book was popular, they'll call, oh, this is a fly car. But the thing is, I never actually said how the car flew. I never said, you know, the mechanism behind it. I never talked about the design. I never talked about how many people go in the car. I never talked about how it would impact society in any way. Or maybe I would talk about that. But the point is, just because someone takes the name of a concept that I defined so loosely and applies it to it doesn't make my book influential in any way. Other people went ahead and did all the hard work and had their own visions, and your vague general label could apply to it quite well. Sorry about that rant. I wasn't actually planning on going off on that one. So, 2.5 stars out of 5, because it was all right. The next book I'm going to read. A few weeks ago, I was in a second-hand shop in Belgium, and I found an omnibus from John Wyndham, 3 books from there. So we've got The Kraken Awakes, we've got The Day of the Triffids, and we've got The Chrysalids, all books that I've read before. And so the next novel I'm going to review is, of course, The Day of the Triffids. Maybe one of the books, maybe of all the science fiction books I've ever read, second only to War of the Worlds. I've probably read this book more times than any other. And I started it last night, and I already read more in one sitting than I did in 5 nights of Neuromancer. So it's going okay. Final thing that I'm going to just mention here, I'm taking part in the National Novel Writing Month. So in the month of November, you've got to write a 50,000-word novel in 30 days. That's it. So if I stick with it at the end of this month, I should finish my first ever draft of a complete novel, or first ever complete first draft of a novel. I've written many times like stories or parts of stories longer than 50,000 words, but I've only ever got to 50,000 words and around about 5 or 6 chapters in. Hopefully I'm going to complete 30 chapters in 30 days and actually reel off a full story. I'm not actually going with the novel that I started a while ago. I'm saving that idea until I've got a bit more time to write it. I've gone for one of my sort of third rung novel ideas. So if this is just wasted, or I get sick of the story after 30 days, or if I just fail and I'm not excited about it, doesn't really matter. I've still got my other good novel ideas ready to go. So hopefully November I'll finish that, December edit it, maybe in the new year I'll release my first science fiction novel length publication on the world. So see how that one goes. Anyway, If you've enjoyed this episode, email me, luke@juggler.net. If you've got any book reviews or book suggestions, email me, luke@juggler.net. Or check out the sfbrp.com wiki page, and you can add anything there, comments on the episodes that I'm doing there, or links to any articles or anything that you want to add, that you want me to read or you want other listeners to read, add it there to the wiki. So, catch you next time.